RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Well, one of the big news stories of the past week is the announcement by the Alliance Group proposing the closure of its 139-year-old Smithfield meat processing plant in Timaru, affecting 600 workers and their families. A significant blow, you could say, to South Canterbury's economy. Now, Toby Williams, Federated Farmers Meat and Wool Chairperson, attributes the closure to skewed policy favouring forestry over farming, which has harmed the sheep and beef sector. And Toby Williams is with us now on RCR. Hi, Toby. Thanks for coming back on.
No, all good, Paul.
Yeah, this is a, 600 workers, families, 139-year-old plant. This is a kind of a body blow. How's that feel about it, Toby?
It does. And, you know, there are a lot of factors that have gone into it. And forestry, while not necessarily playing a massive part of the closure of this plant, there's not a lot of forestry gone into South Canterbury. It's the declining numbers throughout New Zealand that are putting pressure on these older plants.
Right.
And one of the reasons that it's closing, I mean, Beef and Lamb put their figures out about a month ago now, talking about 1 million less sheep to process in this coming season. And that works out to be about 4% of what we process, 1 million less sheep. So that's a significant portion to drop.
How did that happen, Toby? How does that happen?
Some of that's come, you know, this is land use change into forestry, this is land use change into dairy support, and people just exiting sheep because it's really difficult. Farming sheep's hard. It's not something that's very easy. There's a lot of labour that goes into it. One of the favourite things a sheep can do to you is just find a new reason to die. And it's a challenge. So farmers are choosing to do other things with their land. And some of what we're seeing is the ETS and the ability to earn carbon credits is skewing the profitability of forestry over sheep and beef. Production forestry and sheep and beef probably sit at about the same value in terms of what you can earn over the period of time. When you add that carbon, it skews it a long way out. So we've been calling for some changes to the ETS settings to make sure we even that playing field back up again.
I take it, though, if the stock was available, it can be processed and it can be sold. It's not as if there's been a drop-off in market demand, or has there?
No, well, there has and there hasn't been. Yeah, so we're still selling everything that we've got. We're just selling it at a much lower price. And there are a few reasons behind that. In China, a couple of years ago, we had record lamb prices. Sheep prices were amazing. But that coincided with African swine fever over in China. So they lost pigs. They lost millions of pigs went out of the system. And the Chinese love their protein. And so they switched from having, you know, pork through into sheep meats. It drove the price up. At the same time, Australia were in a rebuilding phase and they weren't supplying as much into that world market. So that drove prices up. But what we saw is what Chinese got on top of the African swine fever and as pig farmers, you know, reared all their pigs again. And all of a sudden, there's an oversupply of pork in China now. So they don't need as much sheep meat. So pork's cheaper than sheep meat, so they buy more pork. So that's driven down the value of what we're getting. And at the same time, we had Australia suddenly hit some big states into record dry areas and record processing numbers coming out of Australia who were flooding that market, driving the overall world price down. Remembering Australia probably eats 80% of the sheep meat they produce. The lamb, they eat that domestically. So it's a huge market. But then the 20% they export suddenly lifted because, you know, they were eating a little bit less at home, but they also had an excess of supply. So they just dropped that into the world market, which has affected our pricing, driving down those values. And it's part of the reason, you know, sheep farmers are choosing to get out.
We used to be defined by the number of sheep we had, Toby, you know. It was known around the world. There was a ratio. Is this just a slowly dying sector now that will kind of just fade away over time? Is that how it'll go?
Well, I don't think it's going to fade away completely. I think the concerns we've really got now and 1 million going out in this next year is a big chunk to lose all at once. But we are starting to become more of a boutique industry. Which poses a massive challenge because when you're exporting sheep overseas or meat overseas, you know, it's going into the trade, into restaurants and into people's homes. They want a supply all year round. All of a sudden, we're going to find ourselves at the shoulders of the season, you know, not having enough supply. So that's into the winter, you know, and into early spring before our new season's lambs come on. we're going to have these big fluctuations in the availability of our product. And for people overseas, that's a big turnoff. They don't want to see massive price swings, you know, from, you know, almost doubling in price because of the availability. They want a consistent supply all year round at a relatively stable price, understanding at the shoulder of the season you need to pay a bit more because there's going to be a few less available for you to, you know, to purchase. So, yeah, but we have, you're right. When I was a child, I think we peaked at 80 million sheep in New Zealand. And that was in sort of the mid-80s, early 80s. And that coincided with the Korean War. And the wool off our sheep's back, so all of those wool uniforms going into the Korean War was just massive. Every uniform was made out of wool. Right. What we've seen after that is, you know, army uniforms now are made out of synthetics. I mean, they're way different to what they were. So that started the decline in sheep numbers. So we're probably down at about a quarter of what we were at our peak.
Okay. Well, there's always Lanaco who've got the wool filters for the space capsules now, but I guess that's just so niche that it's not going to use up too much. In terms of the incentivizing land use, forestry over farming, that must stick in the craw a bit for the farming sector, because in the end, that's just based more on an ideology than an empirical operation like farming, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think the concerns we've got around, I think we should be clear, forestry is really important. For farming sector, it's important as well. I've got forestry on my property. We've got about 100 hectares. That helps to diversify our income. That helps to spread, you know, some risk out and take some paddocks out that really aren't economic to be farming.
I'm thinking about the carbon credit market.
Yeah, the carbon side of things.
And the use of land for that, yeah.
Yeah, and so that's where we come into. So wholesale sheep and beef farms have been converted, you know, and what we're doing is we're converting sheep and beef farms, and the ideology behind it says we're going to use this timber in 30 years, we're going to harvest it, and we're going to be creating something out of it. What we don't know what we're going to do with it at the moment. There's no investment going into new mills and new product uses for that timber. So our belief is that it's skewed. The amount of investment in forestry has been skewed by the ability to earn almost unlimited carbon credits off it. And it's very attractive when you've got the Climate Change Commission saying they wanted over $200 a unit, a ton. That's really attractive if you're a landowner. And if I give you a really quick calculation, we looked at my property a number of years ago, an average price of $80 for carbon, and you can claim carbon for 16 years under the averaging process we currently have. So I claim carbon for 16 years, then I harvest my trees at age, you know, 30. So in those 16 years, the value to me and my business would be about $40 million for carbon farming, which is massive.
Yeah.
If I took my most profitable year from a couple of years ago, when sheep were really going great guns, we were making really good money out of it, over that same period, if I extrapolated it out and our costs and things, you know, stayed balanced, we'd be looking at about a $4 million profit over the same thing.
I see.
So it shows you how far it's skewed.
Yeah, a long way.
A long way, yeah.
And that doesn't take into account any of the other carbon-soaking biology, like all the grass on a farm would soak up carbon too, wouldn't it? This is what we've heard before, people saying that all the flora is potentially a carbon sink, not just stands of pine trees.
Yeah, that's right. Everything that's a plant utilizes carbon dioxide to grow. They convert that, you know, into sugars and then into their structures, how they grow. It's a critical part for a plant, you know, a critical compound for a plant to be able to grow. And so there are some arguments. We are waiting for the government to come back towards the end of this year about what does our emissions profile look like? What does it mean for farming? Not for New Zealand, because the argument at the moment is we talk about methane and the contribution that methane has to global warming. And depending on which group of scientists you want to talk to, some of them will tell you methane's got it's 100 times worse than carbon dioxide, but it's shorter lived. So how do we account for that? As a farmer, we say, like, a lot of that carbon actually that our grasses store is now being stored in terms of an animal. It's been stored, you know.
Yeah.
So the carbon cycle for an animal, we believe, is circular. You know, the amount of that those animals eat, you know, is exactly the same as what they actually end up emitting. So it's a net zero cycle. However, that's been a bit harder to argue when you've got scientists telling you that how bad it is. Methane's 100 times worse than CO2, so we need to tax you to do something about it.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in terms of the cost of buying a farm, that must be affected as well when you've got land use for ETS forestry kind of bidding up the value of land and taking out the affordability for people who just want to do farming. Is that a problem at the moment?
It's a really, really big concern. It's currently stopping a lot of succession from sheep and beef farms, especially on smaller ones. So if you've got, say you've worked your whole life, you've got three children, one of them wants to go farming and two of them don't, and you own a farm and you know what, you know, you're a profitable farm, say, but you treat all of your children equally, you know, the person who wants to come onto the farm, the son or daughter, needs to purchase the farm. So you need roughly, you know, a third, you may be able to give them a third, but they've got to buy two-thirds to buy their siblings out. The debt involved in that is just too high to be able to comfortably do it. So we're seeing a succession planning with on sheep and beef farms as the families are choosing to sell up and then do something else. And one of the things that we are seeing is that sheep and beef farmers are selling the big extensive farm and maybe buying a dairy farm because dairy farms are much smaller. The land value of a dairy farm, interestingly, hasn't gone up. Much, but a sheep and beef farm. So my farm's gone up in the last 4 or 5 years. My farm's probably gone up in about 40 to 50% in value. I was very fortunate that we managed to get our succession sorted and pegged. 7 or 8 years ago, we drew a line in the sand and said these are our values and we're going to work to this. If we went through the same equation today with my brother and my sister, there's no way we'd be able to afford to buy my sister out of the property and carry on farming. So, you know, it's a real challenge. And I think, you know, at its peak, and we're not at the peak of the forestry purchasing sheep and beef land, they were looking at paying, you know, $18,000 to $19,000 a hectare. Whereas if you're a sheep and beef farmer, you could probably afford $7,000 or $8,000 a hectare. So it's almost double, really, what a sheep and beef farmer could afford to pay and pay off the debt.
And that changes the face of rural New Zealand over time, doesn't it? Big time.
It does, yeah. We see, diminishing of our communities because on a forestry block, you don't need to have staff there all the time. You know, you've got staff who come in and do some pruning and thinning and those sort of jobs. And when you harvest, obviously you come back in, you know, and you've got a lot more employment happening around that. But that's 30 years away. So within that time, we start to see our communities, our rural communities shrink. You need less schools. The local rugby club, you know, has to close because they can't attract enough players, or it could be the local squash club. And when you see a lot of, one or two scattered throughout the place doesn't change it too much. But when you start to get it concentrated, and we saw this in the 1980s through on the East Coast, we saw this, you know, where our small regional townships in Tauroa, you know, Takamaru Bay, Tolaga Bay were thriving little communities. But, you know, the forestry going in up there really shrank them down to the core of people who couldn't move anymore.
Yeah. All right. And just to finish up, what happens, do you think, to the up to 600 workers who will be, well, it seems jobless after the closing of the Smithfield plant? Is there enough in the sector to absorb that number of workers? Where do they go? How does it work? Maybe you don't know, but maybe you've got a view on that.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to remember the men and women who work at these plants are really highly skilled people. It takes a lot of skill to be able to break a carcass down. It used to be a bit more of a, you know, turn up after school, drop out of school, go to a freezing works and, you know, you have a job. It's much more skilled than that now. So some of those workers will be able to, you know, shift to maybe Silverfin Farms or down to Lornaville and Invercargill for Alliance. Some of them may pick up work. There's a couple of other smaller plants around, you know, the mid-Canterbury area. They may be able to get some work in there. But it's very difficult. If you've got a mortgage and your kids are at school in Timaru and your family's in there, it's really difficult. And that plant does have multi-generational staff. People's grandparents work there, parents work there, they've worked there. You know, your life's tied to it. So, you know, some of these guys will hopefully go on and find, you know, other, you know, employment within Timaru. But as we all know, the labour market at the moment is pretty tight. It's not a great news story for those guys. And there's a similar situation to we saw in our Hakone around the Ruapehu district there where, you know, they're going to have to move cities really and uproot their entire lives to be able to you know, to keep food on the table, which is a really, really challenge.
All right. Nice to hear what you have to say, Toby Williams, Federated Farmers Meat and Wool Chairperson. Thanks for coming back on RCR. We'll talk again, I'm sure.
Cool. Thanks very much, Paul. Have a great day.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.